Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rain.
Hi, this is Dr. Jennifer Daniels, and you're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul Channel at BlakeRadio.com. Please visit Amazon.com and check out Murder by Medicine is No Accident. Be the first in your circle to get Dr. Daniels' new Kindle book, Murder by Medicine is No Accident. And you no longer have to fumble and stutter as you try to tell your loved ones of the medical dangers. It even gave my editor goosebumps. A great read. So go over to Amazon.com. As always, I welcome your calls and questions, so please call in at 914-338-0695. All I can say about today's episode is, wow, this is something else. Today I'm going to review a case of organ donation gone awry, so we are told. And I'm going to analyze three of the issues it raises, and I'm then going to take a look at the self-report of the transplant industry, of the financial consequences of a person saying yes to organ donation. Finally, I will review industry changes afoot and what you can do to avoid becoming a victim of murder by medicine in the transplant industry. Now, many times in our lives we say yes to really important things. We have incredible decisions that face us. For example, you can say yes to the $300,000 dream home or marrying the love of your life, or you can say yes to that dream job. But few people can imagine that they have the opportunity to say yes to a multi-million dollar transaction, a transaction for which they will be paid nothing. Americans do it every day. You may have already done it. You might have already signed your organ donor card. So after today's episode, you may want to revisit that decision. That's a bigger decision than you imagine. And there's an oldie song. I'm over the hill here, so I can refer to oldie song. And this song is called What It Is Worth. And I think it really fits here. And the lyrics are, just a few of them, there is something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. Hey, stop. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. I think in the transplant industry, it's time for people to say, hey, stop. What's going on here? Let's look what's going down. So there's a YouTube video that goes along with that song, What It Is Worth. I would definitely say you should watch that one. It's graphic, and it adds to the song and, of course, to today's radio show, but you can watch it afterwards. So I want to read to you first the news story that is the basis for today's show. And I'm going to read it to you because, well, it's not otherwise available. And this happened in Syracuse, New York. And for those of you who don't know, I trained for medicine in Syracuse, New York. And so I'm familiar with a lot of circumstances in Syracuse. And I'm going to add them to the story later on to help you get a better picture of this. So this is Syracuse, New York. And doctors at St. Joseph Hospital Health Center were about to remove organs for transplant from a woman they thought was dead. Then she opened her eyes. She was alive. The State Health Department found St. Joe's care of patient Colleen Burns in 2009. Now, why is this finally being published in 2013? Okay, that's another story. was unacceptable, and a federal agency criticized the hospital for not properly investigating the case. The hospital's mishandling of the case was part of the reason the state health department fined St. Joe's $22,000 last September, the largest fine levied ever against a Central New York hospital. Well, not ever, since 2002. St. Joe's was fined $6,000 over the Burns case and $16,000 for another case. The state could not find a similar case to the Burns case after reviewing the past 10 years of inspection records, a spokesman said. Now, a series of mistakes that began shortly after Burns arrived in the emergency room suffering from a drug overdose led to the near catastrophe, the investigator showed. A review by the state health department found, number one, staff skipped a recommended treatment to prevent the drugs the patient took from being absorbed by her stomach and intestines. So she came to the hospital for an overdose, and they did not treat her overdose. Next, not enough testing was done to see if she was free of all drugs. Next, not enough brain scans were performed. Next, doctors ignored a nurse's observation indicating that Burns was not dead and that her condition was improving. The hospital made no effort to thoroughly investigate what went wrong until it was prodded by the state. The investigation did find that St. Joe's had acceptable organ procurement policies and procedures. Burns, 41 years old, of North Syracuse, recovered from her overdose of Xanax, Benadryl, and a muscle relaxant, and was discharged from the hospital 2 weeks after the near miss in the operating room. But 16 months later, in January of 2011, she committed suicide, said her mother. Having her daughter mistaken as dead and nearly cut open in the hospital was a horrible experience for the family. The family said, the doctors never explained what went wrong. They were just kind of shocked themselves, she said. It came as a surprise to them as well. Burns, who had three daughters, was never upset about the incident, her mother said. She was so depressed it really made a difference to her. Neither Burns nor any of her relatives sued St. Joe's. St. Joe's officials would not discuss the specifics of the case. Burns' family asked them not to. St. Joe's Hospital's goal is to provide the highest quality of care to every patient, every time, the spokesman said in an email. The hospital works with Finger Lakes Donor Recovery Network to follow state policies, strict policies, and procedures for organ donation, she said. These policies were followed in this case, which was complicated in terms of care and diagnosis, Howell said. We've just learned from this experience and have modified our policies to include the type of unusual circumstance presented in this case. St. Joe's officials thought Burns suffered cardiac death, according to documents obtained by the Post Standard under the Freedom of Information Law. Her family had agreed to allow doctors to withdraw life support and remove her organs after they were told she was dead. The day before her organs were to be removed, a nurse had performed a reflex test on Burns, scraping a finger on the bottom of her foot. The toes curled downward, not the expected reaction of someone who's supposed to be dead. There were other indications that Burns had not suffered irreversible brain damage. As doctors had determined, her nostrils flared in the prep area outside the operating room. She seemed to be breathing independently from the respirator she was attached to. Her lips and tongue moved. 20 minutes after the observations were made, a nurse gave Burns an injection of the sedative Ativan, according to records. In the doctor's notes, there's no mention of the sedative or any indication they were aware of her improving condition. None of the signs stopped the process. It wasn't until Burns was wheeled into the operating room on October 20, 2009, opened her eyes, and looked at the lights above the doctor's call lit off. Hospital personnel misread that and doing enough to evaluate her condition. Now you're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels. I'm just going to identify the station here and we'll continue with the show. It's very exciting. Please visit Amber Medicine Accident. The first in your circle to get my new Kindle book. And, of course, I welcome your calls and questions. Please call in. And now, the federal the incident. Despite the sequence of events and intensive cause analysis of the case done by the hospital's quality assurance program, the federal agency, the state started investigating in response to an inquiry from the Post Standard, that's the newspaper. The ash of the state made a surprise inspection that then it was cursory. In other words, superficial perception differences. But that analyzed the cause of the mistake. Investigators finding that. The hospital did not undertake a critical review. Director of Consumers Union near catastrophes like burns says there's no system in place to collect information that would require people to think about how to prevent it in the future. If you don't account for it, it doesn't know. Now, another doctor looking at this said, why, after seeing signs of pain, another doctor commented, the general surgeon in surgery at New York Medical College, said she reviewed the record of the. So that's the story. So where does this go? First of all, there's nothing crazy about this, even though the headline and story says it's crazy. It's a real problem, and it happens more than we'd like to believe. How do we know this? Well, about 851,000 people are murdered every year at the hands of the healthcare system. And this attempted murder, in this particular case, was classified as death due to heart disease. That's an epidemic that we're all told we need to fight with screening exams, risk factor control, research funding, frequent checkups, and lifestyle changes. And in fact, the cause of this is murderous avarice, greed of the healthcare system itself. This lady's admission diagnosis was drug overdose. She was not only denied therapy for her drug overdose, but she was given drugs to help her die. Her death certificate was to read cardiac arrest. Of course, the death certificate was signed by doctors who were harvesting her organs. Her family was told she was dead, and on that basis consented to donate her organs. So let's stick with the story and see the clues that this is not an isolated event, and it was indeed no accident. The only accident is that the patient woke up. First of all, the nurse alerted the doctor that the patient was not dead. Yet, the nurse was ordered to give sedation anyway. So what does this tell you? Well, first of all, the doctor ignored the nurse's information. The doctor did not pause, didn't have a meeting and agonize over this. I mean, this was not his first rodeo. A repeat offender, for sure. How could he be so brazen? What reason did he have to believe he would not be punished if he was found out? He must have had that confidence in order to proceed so boldly. And why did the nurse follow the order that would have made her an accessory to murder? Had she received similar orders before? Why did she not even consider alerting administration? Maybe she had reported events in the past and met with shocking indifference. Another thing that's of concern is the hospital had no policy in place for the nurse to call a hotline and report such a thing. And finally, the penalty, a state fine of $6,000. The hospital is not even closed, not even for a day. This is real alarming because the state would fine $6,000 for what amounted to attempted murder. And the revenues, as we will soon see, for an organ transplant can easily exceed several million dollars. And so this is essentially not only murder, but attempted grand larceny. And so the hospital got a fine of $6,000. And the doctors, they got no penalty, not even an investigation. So the state licensing department did not even investigate the doctors. The doctors' names were even kept out of the paper. Who has that kind of power? These doctors were not acting alone. The district attorney was not alerted. And even if he wasn't alerted, the district attorney, once he sees in this article in the paper that there's an attempted murder taking place at a hospital, he failed to exercise authority to investigate this crime and direct dereliction of his duty and responsibility. It seems to me this crime is a bit more serious than overdue parking tickets, which command a fair amount of enforcement resources in Syracuse, New York. I know this. I live there. If we look deeper, we see that enforcing overdue parking tickets results in fleecing the public of money, and turning a blind eye to this attempted murder facilitates the harvest and sale of a human body, the ultimate fleecing. Perhaps this shows consistency in the enforcement of the law. Now, there is also the county health department. We have a hospital that is murdering people and harvesting their organs for profit. What greater public health hazard? A facility entrusted with restoring health is actually engaged in murder for profit and strikes people and families when they are at least able to defend themselves. You would think the county health department would be on this one. They could save countless lives without even starting a new program or spending another dollar. Just vigorously decry the behavior of this one hospital. Ban them as a provider, a referral partner for health care with the county. But no, nothing, not a peep. So let's take a look at this. In order for this to happen, in order for this event to happen, and have the hospital escape any meaningful penalty, the following groups had to cooperate. The district attorney's office had to stand down. The hospital regulatory state licensing board had to not even close the hospital for a day, find them guilty of no crime, and fine them a piddling $6,000. The state medical licensing board had to decline to investigate the doctors involved. The federal Medicare program had to decide they didn't want to ban this hospital from participation in the Medicare program. The county health department had to, again, continue to allow this hospital to participate in county health programs and funding. The state Medicaid health bureau had to, again, not ban this hospital from participation. The media had to cover the story as a shocking surprise and an accident. The medical insurance company had to pay for the patient's hospital care. I'm sure the hospital bill wasn't even denied. And then five adults were held harmless, the hospital employees. The orderly who pushed the gurney, he knew the patient was alive, had to see the toes wiggling and the tongue moving. The clerk who transcribed the orders. The nurse who gave the injection. And two doctors. It takes more than one doctor to harvest organs, by the way. So to cover up this attempted murder, it took no fewer than five private citizens, six government agencies, and two private corporations, one of which was the hospital itself. Now, none of them working in concert. We don't need to say it's a conspiracy. But each following orders written by faceless, nameless special interests, each following immediate financial incentives. You're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. We're going to do the show, which is basically on the scandal of transplants, and take questions on transplants and then questions on other things as well at the end. So please visit Amazon.com. Murder by Medicine is no accident. And be the first in your circle to get Dr. Daniels' new Kindle book, Murder by Medicine is No Accident. Get your personal Kindle edition. You'll no longer have to fumble and stutter as you try to tell your loved ones of the medical dangers. It even gave my editor goosebumps. A great read. That's Amazon.com, and Murder by Medicine is No Accident. I welcome your calls and questions, so please call in at 914-338-0695. Now, a common motive for murder, which I think is way underestimated, is financial gain. In this case, plenty of financial gain to abound. So I went to the website, www.transplantliving.org, a pro-transplant website that talks about the cost of organ donation and what it might run you. And it turns out that when a transplant happens, the recipient spends 30 days in the hospital in the pre-transplant phase. And if we look at all the organs that can be transplanted from one body, and we're talking about a heart, a lung going to two different people, liver going to one person, kidney going to two different people, and intestines, those are the major organs, then just the revenue received from the 30-day pre-transplant is $199,000. What about procurement? The hospital where the organs are removed receives a procurement fee. It's a procurement fee. If you take the procurement revenue from a patient who's fully transplanted, $575,000. If you take a look at the hospital transplant admission, so the patient has to be admitted to the hospital and the surgery performed. Fees for that complete transplant of all organs is $2.78 million. That's just what the hospital gets, the transplant center. Now, St. Joe's, a hospital that attempted to murder this patient, is not a transplant center. They just harvest organs. And then the physician who does the transplant gets a paltry $340,000. And that's the doctor's fee for transplanting intestine, pancreas, kidney, liver, two lungs, and a single heart, and two kidneys. And then 180 days after the transplant, patients get admitted to the hospital. And that's another $776,000. And then there's immunosuppressants. That's listed as $149,600. Now we look at a organ transplant. We often ask the price of the organ. How much does the organ cost? And this misses the point of all the other costs. These are not costs, by the way. These are revenue streams. So someone paid this money, but guess what? Someone received it too. So somebody who received this money has an incredible financial interest to look the other way when patients like Colleen Burns come to the emergency room, are denied therapy. They're not denied therapy. Therapy is withheld, actually. They don't even realize they're being denied therapy. It's just quietly withheld. Or maybe they're helped along their way and harvested before they're 100% dead. So let's see who these people are that profit. And to see who profits, we can take a look at these column headings. And once we total the amounts of all these expenses, revenue streams for each organ, if all organs are transplanted, impaired organs go to separate donors. We use only the, and we accept this chart at face value, then $4.7 million is the economic revenue streams and activity created by one donor saying yes and all organs being viable at transplant. So who benefits? The transplant hospital is a big benefit. Procurement hospital, the hospital which the organs are harvested, they benefit. Again, the hospital that transplants the organs, they get another big payday when the surgery is done. The physician during the transplant also gets paid, and this is different from the harvesting physician. And then, of course, there's hospital days that occur within the first 6 months after admission. And then there's the drug companies who sell the immunosuppressant drugs. Now, all this activity is donated by one donor saying yes and all organs being viable at transplant. This is why time is of the essence and organs must be as fresh as possible. Turns out 2/3 of organs are not transplantable due to the time lost while the person is dying and the organs deteriorate. More on this later. So doctors are trained to play the long shot. This is important to understand. Doctors are trained to go all out and behave as if each case was the big one. The big one is going to be the $4.7 million mother load. Therefore, the motivating figure is $4.7 million at least. Now, I didn't include gum, bone, cornea, skin, and vein and tendon transplants because these total to less than $200,000. It wouldn't appreciably impact the motivation. But let's take another look at the columns. There must have been, by the wrong numbers, I guess the wrong numbers are being totaled. So if we add the vertical columns that tell us who gets the money, as a result of performing the procurement, the hospital stands to receive $575,500 for procurement. So that's about what St. Joe's stood to receive in just basically an 8-hour period. And then the $1.9 million in fees if the organs are transplanted at their hospital, in which case we know that they're not because it's another transplant hospital. They're part of a regional network. And the doctors stand to receive $340,000. Well, this is attempted murder, an attempted theft of $2.9 million immediately just from these numbers. Now, the penalty for this was a fine of $6,000. And not one doctor lost his license. Nobody was charged with attempted murder. St. Joe's did not even have an active transplant program. It does have an active procurement program, as we mentioned. And like I said, this means that they only stood to gain $575,000. But for every successful murder they gain enough revenue to pay 98 fines. You think they'll do it again? So St. Joe's only gets the procurement column. Who do you think the entities getting the money in the other columns have an interest in helping St. Joe's get away with this? You betcha. Let's see who they are. Well, 30-day pre-transplant care, as we mentioned before, this is the care the recipient gets prior to the transplant. So prior to a transplant, the recipient is admitted to the hospital for 30 days. And this happens at a hospital other than St. Joe's. And the hospital transplant admission is done, is set at other hospitals. And it's easy to see why St. Joe's might not be too heavily penalized by the State Hospital Regulatory Commission for trying to add to the coffers of other hospitals. St. Joe's should have gotten the Good Citizen Award for helping the profitability of transplant centers. This may be why the licensing board levied a fine of $6,000 for an act that would create over $500,000 in revenue for St. Joe's, while adding several million dollars to the healthcare industry. This is not a deterrent. This is a too bad, try again signal. This is like fining a woman $536 for attempting to murder her husband in order to get the million-dollar life insurance policy. So you're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul Channel at BlakeRadio.com. Please visit Amazon.com and get your copy of Murder by Medicine is No Accident. And, of course, I will always welcome your calls and questions. Please call in at 914-338-0695. Next, we see the immunosuppressants. These are drugs. These are recurring revenues. Now, this chart is filled with numbers that only represent 6 months of medications and are calculated at wholesale, less 55% or 45% of wholesale. Now, the average recipient can live 10 years with an organ. So the average recipient really gets 10 years at the six-month price, which is 20 times this price. And it also means that these prices have been shrunk by 55%. So if we do the math, we find the drug company really stands to gain a whopping total of $6.59 million per transplant. Well, that is shocking. And we see that the immunosuppressants are recurring revenues. So they said, since the other prices on the table are retail prices, we need to increase the drug prices to retail. So it's 45%, so we have to increase it up to 100%. And so we do that by dividing by 0.45. Now, again, we take 6 months of medications and we multiply it by 20 to figure out over the 10-year life of this thing. And again, $6.5 million of revenue for drug companies when a donor says yes and all organs are used. So the grand total of the economic activity generated in the medical industry over the life of all the transplanted organs is a whopping $11.16 million. All you listeners know, you are indeed worth $10 million. You guys listening, you're a $10 million man at least. And to earn this much, you would have to earn $248,000 every year for 45 years. In other words, you are worth more dead than alive. Every person who enters a hospital represents a moral hazard, an attractive nuisance. This means that the ease of murdering you is so facile and the magnitude of the profit is so great, the situation is intrinsically unsafe, like putting a child in the custody of a child molester. The design of the situation makes a tragedy inevitable. Another perspective is res ipsa loquitur. This is a lawyer talk, a legal term, says the thing speaks for itself. Having a situation where each person represents an $11.2 million blank check that can be cashed at will by their murderer without question or investigation or penalty speaks volumes. And in this case, having a live patient roll to the operating room for organ harvesting, it's difficult and a stretch of the imagination to believe this was an accident. And comparing the one-time charge that the hospitals get to the recurring charge that drug companies get obscures the fact that the drug industry gets more than twice what the hospital is getting for doing the transplant and gets more than all other sectors of the healthcare industry combined when a donor is harvested. From the grand total of the economic activities, I said, generated in the medical industry over the life of all the transplanted organs from one human being is a whopping $11.2 million. Like I said, you guys are worth more than you know. You're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. And please visit Amazon.com and get your copy of Murder by Medicine is No Accident. Be the first in your circle to get Dr. Daniels' new Kindle book and get your personal Kindle edition. You no longer have to fumble and stutter as you try to tell your loved ones of the medical dangers. It even gave my editor goosebumps. A great read. As always, I welcome your calls and questions. Please call in at 914-338-0695. Now, for those of you who don't know the history, and this is important history to know, the Medical Licensing Board of each state were originally set up and funded by pharmaceutical interests. And this might explain why the doctors in question were not investigated by the Medical Licensing Board, which is charged with regulating doctors. And, of course, their names are not even listed in the newspaper. Drug companies are major advertisers in media of all kinds. This may be why the TV, radio, newspapers did not do a critical, in-depth look at this. Attempted murder here is being ignored. If hospitals were held to the same standard as other citizens, it might be a safer place. If transplant doctors were held to the same standard as other doctors, it would be much safer for patients. Now, if you look at the Business Journal, they've done a story on this. Tissue banking has grown rapidly, and unknown to some families, donated tissue is now being sold. And Dr. Morrissey, an associate professor at Brown University, feels that the transplant situation is unacceptable. And he thinks it can be improved. And he's impatient and not afraid to show it. He wants those organs early. He wants official policy change so that doctors will not be limited to waiting for a patient to die. So I'll repeat that. He says he doesn't want doctors to be limited and have to wait for a patient to die to take the organs. The doctor just needs to declare that death is imminent. Just think how often doctors have been wrong about predicting death to see where this is leading. Death could be declared imminent for whole neighborhoods. Any resident of South Chicago, for example, would be a prime candidate for organ extraction while alive. Now, according to Dr. Morrissey, one-third of organs are not usable because they deteriorate while the patient is dying a natural death. Far better, Dr. Morrissey says, that the organs be harvested before death is inevitable, but after it's imminent. So if you have a car accident, the person's in bad shape, then you just harvest his organs, don't wait for him to die, because maybe you would have made it, maybe you wouldn't have, it looks pretty bad. So in Dr. Morrissey's own words, under this protocol, the donor is alive at the time of kidney recovery. Now this is kidney, liver, lung, and heart, the whole thing. But a determination has been made and confirmed by medical experts that death is imminent. He wrote, and he stresses kidney removal would not cause the death of the donor, which is instead caused foremost by the original catastrophic injury and secondarily by terminating mechanical ventilation. So, yes, of course, the extraction contributes to death. Without the extraction, the person would not have died, or certainly they would have lived longer. And how much longer? Well, let's ask the committee of experts. So let's take a look at this committee of experts. If they keep rejecting the hospital staff doctor's assessment that the potential donor's death is imminent, how many times do you think these experts would be called upon to render an expert opinion? Now you're getting it. Having an expert committee decide would soon be a rubber stamp that's really no protection at all to the patient or their family. You're listening to Rainbow Soul, Healing with Dr. Daniels, and BlakeRadio.com. Please visit Amazon.com and get your copy of Murder by Medicine is No Accident. Be the first in your circle to get Dr. Daniels' new Kindle book, Murder by Medicine is No Accident. With your personal Kindle edition, you no longer have to fumble and stutter as you try to tell your loved ones of the medical dangers. It even gave my editor goosebumps. A great read. And of course, I welcome your calls and questions. Please call in at 914 338-0695. Now, this means many patients whose condition is deemed serious can be conveniently declared in imminent danger of death by the same doctors and hospitals that stand to profit from their death. Now, if as a society we choose to allow this, and I'm not taking a position on this either way, I say, shouldn't the patient's survivors get a piece of the action? How about a 20% commission for the family and their heirs? I think this is fair. This would amount to a piddling $2.2 million. Why do I say piddling? Because the industry is gaining $11.2 million in economic activity. Now, $2.2 million could provide a lifetime of income for the children and surviving spouse of this unfortunate individual. This is a better payout than many life insurance policies. And, of course, the donor, who gave his life, because, of course, he was harvested before death, would have no premiums to pay. This process that is going on in hospitals across the nation right now is more heinous than the transplant industry in India that relies, well, I won't say relies on, that is rumored to have people getting being hit in the head on the street and waking up with one less paired organ. At least they get to live. No, they don't give their consent. But in the United States, apparently, people aren't giving their consent either. Families are being erroneously informed that the patients are dying when they're not. Now, as I said, consent in the U.S. has never been given because the person is not aware they are consenting to the murder of their loved one. And the person consenting is also not aware, and this is the person, the donor, is not aware that when they check that box on their driver's license, they are making a generous donation of $11.2 million to the healthcare industry. Now, I talk to people every now and then. I ask them a question just so I know, like, kind of what's on their mind. And so I was talking to this lady, and I said to her, you know, I think it would be great if the heirs got a commission of 20%, you know, $2.2 million. I said, if you were ill and the hospital decided to murder you and your family consented because you were kind of pretty sick, you know, shouldn't they get $2.2 million? And she said, well, I wouldn't feel comfortable with that. I wouldn't feel comfortable with my family getting $2.2 million like that because it might affect their judgment. That floored me. Not so much that she wouldn't trust her family with $2.2 million when her life hung in the balance, but that she would trust strangers who stood to gain $11.2 million with her life hanging in the balance. So in other words, picture this. You're at a hospital, and you're being cared for by this industry that stands to gain $11.2 million if they give you just a little nudge, into the afterlife. They stand to gain $11.2 million. You get paid nothing. Your family gets a warm and fuzzy feeling that your organs are living on. I mean, this is like too cool. Now, you may be thinking this is horrible, but people who need organs are getting them, right? Nice thought. Try this one on for size. Now, those of you who've been watching this, listening for a while, you know the punchline is coming, right? It's coming. We know that between 85 and 89% of everything doctors do is not beneficial. That means the patient didn't need it done. Could it be that 85 to 89% of those on transplant lists would not benefit from a transplant? Could it be that 85 to 89% of those on the transplant list would receive just as much benefit from another course of action besides transplant? A shocking thought, but I think it's one that needs to be considered. Luckily, I have some experience in this area, so I can contribute a little more information that's not yet in the literature. I should probably write a case study of this. I should do that. So I can tell you my experience in the heart transplant area. So I don't have experience with the kidney transplant area, but I do have experience with the heart transplant area. So I'm a family practice doctor, board certified. Like I said, I don't trust research. I can assure you my own experience, and I personally think it's reasonable to extrapolate from that. So I'm only speaking from my personal experience. There's a particular patient in my medical practice. Actually, it wasn't in my medical practice. This patient was deemed to need a heart transplant, but was not eligible to be placed on the transplant list since he was too ill. He had too many other illnesses that made him unlikely to benefit from a transplant, and so he was not eligible for a transplant. He had diabetes. He had, of course, an awful heart. His output, cardiac output, was only 10%. Normal is 65% or more. He had going into kidney failure. He had gout. He had diabetes. So I said, no way. We cannot transplant you. You are not a candidate for a heart transplant. You are too sick. Lucky for him, he was not placed on the transplant list. Even luckier for him, his daughter-in-law knocked on my door. I got home from the office that evening, and there was this knock on my door. And she said, Dr. Daniels, you've got to save my father-in-law. Well, I have to tell you the story. Back in those days, everything was deemed to be racist. And so this lady was convinced that because she was African-American, so was her father-in-law, she was convinced he was being denied a transplant because he was African-American. And dealing with racism and saving lives at the same time was a little much for me to bite off. And so I told her, look, I can't help you with the race angle on this, but I'm going to do everything I can to improve his health and leave the racism bit to somebody else. But I'm going to see what I can do to help him get better. Of course, I told her I couldn't promise her anything. Absolutely no promises, but I would do what I could. Well, I walked into the hospital, took a look at this guy. Sure enough, he was at death's door. He had one foot in the grave and the other one on a banana peel. All swollen up, all the fluid he'd taken on because his heart was obviously failing, and they had a ceremonial oxygen mask tacked to his face, which was slipping. It did not look good. So I said, well, I said to her, are you really determined you want to do everything? She said, yes, I want to do everything. I said, okay. No hospital water, no hospital food. You've got to bring in food from home. I gave her a list what to feed him. She said, okay, I will do it. So I happened to be, thank God, friends with the attending cardiologist. So I said to him, I said, look, it does look pretty bad. He said, yeah, it looks pretty bad. He says, you know, I'm glad you came in to kind of calm the family down. They were a little anxious. I said, yeah, I'll help out all I can. I said, but would you write for him to have a little B vitamin and a vitamin E? He says, oh, Dr. Daniels, sure, no problem. I said, okay. So now you're going to have to watch his drugs, you know, adjust them any way you see fit, whatever you think. He said, okay, sure, of course. So after 4 days of no hospital water, no hospital food, his daughter bringing in his food, after 4 days, he was up, walking, talking, shaving himself, not using any oxygen, and off all of his heart medications. And his heart was working normally, the normal cardiac output, and he was demanding his car keys, and he was accusing his daughter of trying to steal his fortune of a few a few hundred thousand dollars. Now, this man clearly did not need a heart transplant, yet that he was deemed too ill to benefit from. Now, can you imagine the healthier individuals who made the transplant list? How many of them might not really need a heart transplant? Because they are certified healthier than this man, who clearly did not need a heart transplant. This suggests to me that between 85 and 89% rule applies to heart transplants as well. I can't comment on other transplants. I don't have direct experience as a primary care doctor. Patients are generally would leave my care long before they would need a transplant. Now, another practice in my practice I had is that I would minimize people's medications. So in the 10 years of my medical practice, I only had one patient for whom a heart transplant was recommended. And this was the one, and, you know, he did not need it. So out of 4,000 patients, that was that situation. Now, you're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at blakeradio.com. Please visit amazon.com and check out Murder by Medicine is No Accident. Be the first in your circle to get Dr. Daniels' new Kindle book, Murder by Medicine is no accident. Get your personal Kindle edition so you no longer have to fumble and stutter as you try to tell your loved ones of the medical dangers. It even gave my editor goosebumps. A great read. That's Amazon.com. Murder by Medicine is no accident. And as always, I welcome your calls and questions. Please call in at 914-338-0695. Now you can see how this murderous theft makes it possible to maintain another deception, which is that the people who are on transplant lists really need those transplants. In other words, the truth is that people who are on the transplant list need to get organs promptly or they will continue living and realize they've been deceived into putting their lives on hold and liquidating their fortunes for a hoax. So why is the price in your head so high? Why are you worth $11.2 million dead? Well, it's to cover the real goal, which is your murder. The rules for murder, in this case, make it challenging to get all the papers signed and the T's crossed and the I's dotted, like a game of rummy. If I just handed you the deck of cards and say, count them up and that's your score, that'd be no fun. There's no strategy. There'd be no activity to engage the emotions and the mind. There'd be no pretense for the reason to exchange money back and forth. Okay, so how do you avoid being a victim donor? And how do you avoid being a victim recipient? The thing to understand is that the organ donor who is electively murdered prior to the onset of death is a victim. But the recipient who doesn't need the organ and who's on the organ transplant list is just as much a victim. So there's two things we'd like to prevent, right? The first is the easy one. How do you prevent being a victim donor? First thing is, never go to the hospital. Just don't do it. Now, I'm going to say that. They're going to say, but Dr. Daniels, that's not practical. Well, if this is not possible, then when you go to the hospital, have someone at your side at all times. That means the waiting room, the recovery room, the hospital room, and that person needs to accompany the gurney to the operating room. In fact, I'd even go a step further. Demand that the person be extubated. That means pull out any tubes they can breathe on their own. That tube be removed in the presence, you know, have your friend make that demand. The tube be removed. Because if you're alive and they remove that breathing tube, you'll actually start breathing on your own. And then your support person can engage in hand-to-hand combat with the doctors or whatever they have to do to prevent them from cutting you open when you're obviously alive. So, when you get to the hospital, have someone at your side at all times. And that means the waiting room, the recovery room, hospital room, minor procedures room, you name it, they need to be there. This person's job is to take your side in all matters. Remind the doctor that you said no. Tell the doctor, no, you don't want, tell them it's their job to tell the doctor no. It's their job to tell the doctor that they have to pray on them to stall, give you time to wake up in case you're not dead. So if they tell the doctor that they're going to pray on whether or not to harvest your organs, this is a doctor's signal to leave the room and leave you alone. So that person also has to ask the doctor or nurse what drug you're getting and why. They should write it down and pretend to be writing it down. This is important. This lets the doctor and the hospital know that there will be another competing record available to any investigator. I have been aware of cases where hospitals have altered the records to show that certain things didn't happen when actually they did. Hospitals commonly revise the chart in cases of suspicious deaths. So even if your assistant is not really writing things down, this is their job. It's their job to stay at your side all the time, to ask what drug you're getting and to write down the drug that you're getting. This sends a message that you're not going to be an easy target and they'll pick someone else to sacrifice. Instruct your assistant to stay with your body, as I said, even if and after you're declared dead. And they are to refuse to consent to any organ donation. They are to insist that all medications be stopped for 10 hours before the breathing tube is removed. And so if you stop all drugs for 10 hours, and that will allow time for any sedative that you were given to wear off. And so if you are awake, as in the case of this particular lady, you would cough and buck and say, and, you know, your friend would realize you're obviously alive. And then they can ring the bell for the nurse to come take that tube out. So then your assistant is to call the nurse, like I said, and demand that the tube be removed as soon as you start coughing. Then you get dressed and go home as soon as you can. As soon as you can sit up on the side of the bed, get out of there. Okay, so that's how you prevent being a victim donor. So don't sign any permission for donation. Do not sign that thing on the back of your driver's license saying you'll be a donor. Because when you sign that, you get special treatment, and that special treatment may not be in your best interest. Okay, so how do you avoid being a victim recipient? Now, there's a challenge. Okay. First of all, to avoid being a victim recipient, to avoid receiving an unnecessary organ transplant, you first need to understand what causes organ failure. And this is a little more complex, but I'm going to try and make it as easy as possible. First, you need to avoid all prescription and over-the-counter medications. The second leading cause of the need for liver transplant in the United States is acetaminophen, the main ingredient in Tylenol. I mean, this is shocking. And this is a statistic, by mainstream, organ transplant people. But now, if you go in the organ transplant place at the Lahey Hospital, they list 18 causes of liver failure and organ transplant, and they don't even mention acetaminophen use, which is a totally avoidable cause of liver failure. Now, you got to think in generalizations here. Just like acetaminophen / Tylenol is the main cause or the second most frequent cause for liver transplants, alcohol being the first, alcohol or viral hepatitis, this is also the case with other organ failures. So if you just take the one simple step of avoiding all prescription and over-the-counter medications that are patented products, then your chances of needing an organ of any kind greatly, greatly reduce. Definitely see a replay of my dialysis episode for more information on the kidney issue. Finally, in the unlikely event that you are told you have any organ-specific disease that can end in organ failure, that is your alarm. Get a second and third opinion from an unlicensed healer, not a medical doctor, because they're all trained to do certain things. So accept no further therapy from the licensed healer that diagnosed the condition. Doctors are trained to monitor, put that in parentheses, monitor you at an early stage of the disease and to give therapy and advice that actually hastens the need for a transplant. For example, most cardiac medications will create a need for a heart transplant. So once a doctor has told you, hey, you have XYZ organ disease, and, we need to do something or you might need a transplant. Now, you know what, doctor? Thank you for the hot tip. And then apply yourself to any other healing that you can possibly access. Again, you're looking at an $11.2 million moral hazard, severe temptation. Any licensed healer, just by the way, is an agent of the government that issues the license. This person is compelled to follow dangerous standard of care protocols. And the standard of care is not designed to work for you. If you feel good, do not embark on therapy of any kind. So this is very, very important. And you're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at blakeradio.com. Please visit amazon.com. Murder by Medicine is no accident. And be the first in your circle to get Dr. Daniels' new Kindle book, Murder by Medicine is No Accident. Get your personal Kindle edition, and you will no longer have to fumble and stutter as you try to tell your loved ones of the medical dangers. It even gave my editor goosebumps. A great read, and that's at amazon.com. I welcome your calls and questions, so please call in at 914-338-0695. And people have questions, so we'd like to take them now. We have about 6 more minutes left in the show. Let me move my thing here and check and see. Sometimes I don't get to see everything in one view here. All right, great. So with the transplant industry, it is filled with scandal. One scandal being that people's organs are being taken under false pretenses. They do not tell the donor that he's making an $11.2 million contribution. They often don't tell the family that the patient had or might have had a chance of living. And in some cases, care is actually withheld to facilitate and expedite death. So that's the donor side of the issue, which is just an awful, treacherous thing to have happen. On the recipient side, what's going on is many people who need transplants, well, first of all, many people are given drugs according to the standard of care, and it's those drugs given according to the standard of care that cause the organ failure. So that's one thing that happens on the recipient side. And the only way to prevent that is to not take drugs or avoid drug therapy of all kinds. Okay, we have a question here. Let me move my little cursor. Okay. Yes, 2193, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Dr. Daniels. I'm Miriam Snyder here. How are you?
Fine. Well, it's good to hear from you.
Good.
What's your
question? Have a question. My auntie has a heart transplant. I guess her daughter, the doctors told her she needed it. She was feeling a little bad one day, looked a little drawn. They took her in, and that was it.
Wow.
67 years old, and they gave her a transplant. So my question would be, how do you determine, you know, when is it needed and when is it not? The woman is slim, petite. Never had a health problem, and I just couldn't believe, because she looked a little drawn out and tired, that they rushed her in, and the next thing they said she needed a heart transplant, and now the woman has a pacer.
Oh, yes, right, exactly. That's there's a whole line of products to be sold there. All right, great. I'll answer that question. I'll take your answer off the air. Oh, I need to figure this out. Okay. Again, what I said is you got to get a second and a third opinion from a non-licensed practitioner. You know, go see a nutritionist healer. Go see an alternative healer. That's what you have to do. You absolutely have to do that. As soon as you get the news that a transplant might even be in the works, because a lot of these illnesses that we interpret as organ failure are simply one malnutrition or two poisoning with drugs. And, you know, I am just shocked now to find all the people who are being recommended for transplants. A person getting cancer, chemotherapy. Well, that's ridiculous. The chemotherapy caused the organ failure. Why don't you stop the chemo? Duh. But, you know, who asked me? Chloe, you're on the air.
Hi. What would you do if you had a situation where they were telling you you needed a new kidney? What would
you
say
away.
To them?
I'd walk away. I would say I want to pray on it, and I would walk out the office. That's exactly what I would do.
And you wouldn't keep doing. Has anyone ever gotten off of three times a week dialysis and lived that you know of?
Well, again, the person on dialysis has got to be a little bit determined. You know, I've worked with people, and when they have done their enemas and changed their diet and blah blah blah, they usually get down to around one a week dialysis or one every other week dialysis. And then, either I lose them to follow up, or they, decide, what the hell, the dialysis is easier. But I certainly have had people in my practice who've been told that they need dialysis. They've refused dialysis and then gone on to live without the dialysis. So there's two pieces. One is saying no in the first place, which is always the easiest way to go. And the other one is getting off once you start it. So getting off once you start takes a tremendous amount of determination, and it depends on if the person's making urine or not.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a couple of factors there.
And the drinking is a factor. They don't want you to drink, and they tell you can eat meat, all the things that are opposite of the natural way of healing.
Exactly.
You know, crazy.
That's,
well, thank you. Yeah.
You're welcome. That reminds me of what happened in medical school. So I'm in medical school. I'm learning all about this incredible stuff about hypertension and the need to treat it. And, you know, then I learn about kidney failure, which is a complication of hypertension. Like, whoa, time out. Raise my hand. What's this hypertensive medicine we give causes kidney failure. And Dr. Daniels, please don't worry about it. You're overthinking it. Okay. I said, wait. This kidney diet we're giving them, this water program we're giving them, if you took a normal person and put them on this program, they would get kidney failure. Well, Dr. Daniels, this is a special case. Oh, I see. Oh, boy, this is so complicated. Glad I went to medical school to sort this out. So even as a second-year medical student, and this little physiology they taught me, it was obvious to me that what we were telling people was creating and worsening the issue. Yep, you're on the air. Hello? Did you have a question? Yes.
Yes. Is it me?
Uh-huh.
Dr. Daniel?
Yeah.
Hi, this is Monica. And you said that you were talking about, I think, if you had a loved one in the hospital and
yeah.
I guess they said if death was imminent, you're supposed to ask them to take off all the medications and, wait like 10 hours or so.
This is once they tell you they're dead. Once they tell you the person's dead, you say, okay, fine, stop all the drugs, don't put anything else in anybody's IV, stop everything, you know, let's just wait 10 hours, and you sit right there, be real patient, like you got no
mm-hmm.
place else to go, because, I mean, what the heck, that person's dead, right, no emergency now.
Mm-hmm.
They have them stop all IV medications, and you can check all the bags, make sure nothing's got anything but water going in it, or even stop that, no one's going to die with no water in 10 hours, right?
That was my question. Okay,
yeah,
just stop
Once
everything.
They tell you the
okay.
person's dead, tell them stop everything, mm-hmm. you sit there and wait 10 hours, and if they wake up, you got your answer.
Okay, wow.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
I just wanted that clarification.
You're welcome. Yeah, it's a good clarification. Okay. Any other questions? I think there was one. Wait a second. Alrighty. Okay. I think that's everything. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. Oh, next week, I got to tell you what we're going to do next week. Next week's another doozy. I'm telling you, every time I think I'm out of material, I get more. Next week is the genome fraud. Many of you know that they decode the genome. It's now being used as a basis of fraudulent silence of determination, as a basis for invading your privacy, placing you under arrest because of your genes, and engaging in GMO bioengineering of humans. Yes, humans are now being genetically modified. So that is next week's talk. And so definitely tune in to find out how to keep from being genetically modified by the, you can't even call it a healthcare industry. I guess you could say by the industry. So thank you for listening and tune in next week.